Hey Brian, hey Rick, Shooter McGavin here on a Masters weekend, day two. Wow. So I heard your From the Tips podcast is kind of badass.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of From the Tips. It's me, your boy Brian, always joined by my fantastic co-host Rick Landis. How we doing, good buddy?
Doing better than my computer, and that's good enough for me.
That thing is fighting. If you can wake up every morning and like be like, you know what, I'm doing better than that, you're having an okay day.
Yeah, it means you're alive. That's the line that my laptop is teetering with right now. It calmed down a little bit, but I'm going to be honest with you, folks. One of these weeks, I might have to switch to my phone because my laptop is not doing well.
It's bound to happen at some point here. And yeah. I wonder whose podcast it's going to happen on, either yours or Gina's. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's going to happen at some point. We'll have to wait and see. But other than that, I'm doing all right. I had a significantly less caffeine today than I normally have. So I'm kind of struggling a little bit.
Was that on purpose or?
Well, I was just really busy during work, so I didn't get to drink my caffeine during the day. And then I didn't get to drink that until like 2:30, almost 3 o'clock. And I was like, all right, well, I can't drink more now.
Right.
So I just didn't. So that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, but, I feel that.
But, you know, it's whatever, you know? Some people don't have caffeine, so I can't be picky even though I have an addiction.
Look, I don't think your caffeine addiction is as bad as your nasal spray addiction was. I feel like we have this one under wraps pretty well.
I mean, yeah, there's people that are way more addicted to caffeine than I am. So
Yeah.
No worries there. Relatively speaking, I think I drink very little amount of caffeine compared to a lot of people.
Yeah, you have what, like 2-3 energy drinks a day, something like that?
I have 400 milligrams a day.
Yeah, that's a lot better than a lot of people.
Yeah, because I don't drink coffee, which I think helps. Because people who drink coffee, like, forget that coffee has caffeine in it, I feel like. So they're like, oh, I'll just have a casual 10 cups of coffee today and not even think about it.
So I've done that 100%. Except I know there's caffeine in it.
Yeah.
The only thing is, like, on weekends, I don't always drink coffee. I don't really get caffeine headaches or anything like that if I don't have coffee. I really just drink it if I'm tired. And I seem to be tired most times. So it's pretty much a response to my body being like, hey, we should probably get some coffee. Yeah, it seems to be pretty helpful in the making me awake thing. But I feel like, and my friend at work brought this up today. He was like, take like a 2-week break from coffee and come back. You're going to be 3 sips into 1 cup. You're going to be absolutely wired for hours. And I was like, that.
Yeah, but those are going to be the most miserable 2 weeks of your life.
Correct. That was my response. I was like, look, that sounds all fine and good. It does. I don't know if I could do 2 weeks. I'll be so tired all the time.
Yeah, that's a long time.
It's just a lot. There's a lot to do. Yeah. Well, we don't have a whole lot to talk about outside of golf right now in the sports world due to the fact that we are not basketball people. Also, the Flyers aren't very good, so we're not going to talk about them. But we do have baseball coming up. I believe, if I am not correct, the Philly season does start next week, maybe late this week. Hold on here. Let me look up the spring training schedule. Hold on now. Where
it
is
feels
it?
Like spring because it's 60 degrees out in the middle of February.
Yeah, ain't that something? It is aggressively warm for February. That's
not okay.
It's weird. And what sucks is we know it's going to get cold too. We know
it. Yeah.
You know,
it's not going to just like not be cold.
Yeah, it's bound. We're going to have snow in March. I know it. I feel it in my bones.
Yeah.
It's going to be March. Everybody's going to be like, well, February was pretty nice. And then we're going to get like multiple feet of snow in a month.
Yeah, it's going to be like 3 feet of snow.
And then in April, it's just going to rain, making the snow ice.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will slowly limp our way into spring which will be the first 2 weeks of May before it becomes 80 degrees, and then it's the summer. It's a very classic Pennsylvania thing where the winter, quote unquote, just winds up being the end of February and all of March.
Yeah.
Spring is 2 weeks in early May, and then boom, it's summer. You never really had time to react to a spring because the springtime was just gray, wet, and icy, which is super unenjoyable. For those of you that don't live in the Atlantic Northeast, don't bother. Stay where you are.
Find somewhere else.
Because right now, golfing, we're all trying to get it in as much as humanly possible because we know the reality that is going to be March and it is not going to be pretty. Mm-hmm. I think the worst bit, and it's only because I've only recently gotten seasonal allergies, is when spring is fit into a very small gap. It's not like your allergies are lesser because there's less spring. No. Mother Nature attempts to fit a month of spring into 2 weeks.
She tries to kill you like all at once instead of over
all at one time. Yeah. She's like, oh, you have an allergy to pollen. Okay, let me try to fit a month's worth of pollen into 2 weeks. Your car is going to be a weird shade of yellow. And you're going to love it. It's going to be great. You're not going to breathe for weeks. It's going to be wonderful.
Yeah. And then when you can finally breathe again, you're going to be so happy.
Yeah. And, you know, then that's really when summer really begins for me, is once my nostrils reopen and I can feel like I'm a human being again. But yeah, baseball officially for the Philadelphia Phillies starts on Saturday, February 25th. This very Saturday, we have baseball, and it will be going forward until October, which is great news for us at like baseball, like Rick and I here. So for those of you that are excited for baseball season, I hope your teams do awesome. I hope they don't do better than the Phillies. If you're a Mets fan, no. Just no. If you're a Braves fan, even more no. And those are the only fan bases. Actually, Houston fans, you can also get railed too. Yeah. Not a fan of you either.
Not anymore.
But hey, the rest of the league, hope you guys have great seasons. Baseball's fun. Let's have fun with it. But more importantly, as we are a golf podcast, we're about to get into that golf because, well, obviously we had the Netflix documentary drop. Rick and I are a couple episodes in. We're going to talk about that. Tiger played this week. We're going to talk about that. There's a little bit of drama with Tiger as well. And then there's it's Jon Rahm's world. We're just living in it. We'll talk about that. But first, I needs to know what happened in sports history today.
Well, you mentioned being excited about baseball season 100% coming up.
100%.
And I got to ask you, what is one of your reasons for being excited about baseball season? What do you get to do during baseball season? You pull out your phone, you pull out your debit card, you maybe start to make some guesses about what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, you start
before that, before you could do that,
right?
It wasn't quite so known.
Right.
And one man stands above the rest. He had his meeting with the commissioner to discuss his gambling problems. Pete Rose in 1989 today.
Pete Rose. Met with
the commissioner of baseball to talk about his gambling problem. And for those of you that don't know, Pete Rose was a very avid gambler on the game of baseball, and it got him in a lot of trouble.
It got him in all sorts of trouble. Famously never bet on his own games. He's famously
which is smart saying,
which is smart to do. However, man, did he have a gambling issue. He's famously a part of the Big Red Machine in Cincinnati, also was on the 1980 Phillies World Series team and the 1983 Old Geezer Phillies team that wound up making the World Series. Also famously not in the Hall of Fame, even though he leads Major League Baseball in multiple hitting categories because of his gambling issue. So really kind of not the guy that you want to focus on if you're Major League Baseball. But if you're a baseball fan, you know who Pete Rose is, and you know he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame because of all of his records. To me, it's like if he never bet on his own games, why not, right? Why not? And honestly, if he's betting on his own games, my guess is he'd probably bet on himself more often than not. Why would he not try to benefit from the fact that he's a talented ball player. I never quite understood why professional athletes can't gamble on games outside of the ones they're playing in.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, you have no control over that.
Nothing.
Like, what's the problem? Like, betting on a game that you play in, yeah, obviously there's a problem with that because you can throw a game very easily if you're one of the people in the game. But, like, if you're betting on what else is going to happen, like, you have no control over that.
No. How would you even begin to have control over that?
I don't know. That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, and, NHL player Evander Kane ran into the same issues recently, but he doesn't seem to have been completely blackballed by the organization that he plays for. So, interesting change of events there when you look at the NHL to Major League Baseball. But Pete Rose had his meeting with the commissioner on this day in 1989. What a legend. Pete Rose, I'll tell you what. That's a good one. That's a solid one.
And then the only other one I wanted to shout out in 1992, which I thought she was later than this for some reason, but Christy Yamaguchi wins Olympic gold in women's figure skating for the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason, I feel like she was figure skating much longer than that. I don't know how long her career was necessarily, but I feel like we were hearing of her up until more recently.
I thought that was more of a 2000 thing.
Was it?
I don't know. I'm about to look it up, though.
She's married to Brett Hedekin.
Let's see how many Olympic golds this girl has. All right.
I don't know. Maybe it's like she's a commentator or something, but I feel like I hear her name more often than not.
Well, I think she's a commentator now, but also she only has that one gold in 1992, two world championships gold, one world junior championships gold, and another world junior championships pairs gold. And that stretches from 1988 to 1992. So I guess maybe we're just thinking of her as more of a commentator, which now makes me start to think, do we watch more figure skating than we thought we did? Do we know more about figure skating than maybe we thought? Obviously, she was in the great 1994 film D2, The Mighty Ducks. She was in that movie. As well as Everybody Loves Raymond when she did a cameo, episode 19, The Dog.
Interesting.
Funny enough. Interesting that I found her in her filmography at this point. Look, Olympic gold medal for anybody in the United States, hell yeah. Specifically Xander Schauffele. That's a gold medal right there. But and you want to know what?
What?
If I was a betting man and I was playing a sport and I wanted to bet on that sport, I think I would want to be Jon Rahm right now and bet on myself every single time I decide to tee it up. Every time.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So just to put into perspective here, Jon Rahm, since January 8th, which is about a month and a half ago, has 3 PGA Tour wins and has never finished outside the top 7.
Not bad.
In the starts that he's made since January 8th. Since October 9th of last year, he has 5 professional wins and hasn't finished outside the top 8. His worst finish in that stretch being at the Hero World Challenge in December, which was a T8. Since August 14th of last year, he still has those 5 professional wins and hasn't finished outside the top 15 when he came T15 at the Tour Championship. So basically, since August of last year, you can lock this man into a top 20 finish. Top 15 finish if you want to. And
that's not bad.
And if we do it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 5 wins out of 13 starts. Almost winning at a 50% clip. He's almost there.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty damn good. Jon Rahm getting it done again at the Genesis Invitational. It begins to feel like it's Jon Rahm's world, and we're just living in it at this point. He went ahead and shot 65, 68, 65, 69. Nice. To get the W there. And it's really hard to truly wrap my head around how well he's been playing, considering we talked about this, you know, what feels like not too long ago when he was going through that stretch where he just couldn't seem to get himself into rhythm. From March of last year, so almost a full year ago, to July of last year, he only had one win and two top 25s in the rest of his six starts in that stretch. I'm not sure if he was injured or something, or maybe something was just off. But, you know, talk about flipping a switch and just going absolute beast mode. He's absolutely dominating everyone in statistics. His driving distance is better. His putting's better. His approach is better. The only thing that's in line with tour average right now is his driver accuracy. But considering his approach game, it does not matter where he puts the ball. If he can find it, he's probably getting on in regulation. So, Rick, I got to ask you, what is your reaction to the absolute trouncing Jon Rahm is putting on the PGA Tour right now?
Honestly, I think it might come down to one thing, and that's the equipment, because he has the new Callaway clubs. I forget what they're called. But
Paradigm is a
Paradigm.
Paradigm.
He recently, like, was it 2 years ago, switched over to Callaway? Maybe even last year it was. Was
his officially first year with Callaway? Officially 2 years ago when he started with the No, I think it was 3 years ago because he started with the Mavericks and then went to the Epics when those got released last year. So
Feel like it hasn't been that long. Anyway, equipment changes, feel changes. Like everybody that's listening has probably had multiple sets of clubs at this point, and you obviously like other clubs better than, like, newer clubs always feel better, and you always have a specific club that you like the best. Like, I don't know many average golfers that have all of the same clubs in their bag, because you get clubs over time and you get used to them and you like the feel of some of them as opposed to other ones. And I think that might just be where Jon Rahm is at right now. I think he just might like the feel of these clubs. They might just be, like, designed for him, to say, like, for lack of a better term. And you couple that with his just raw talent and ability to win and play really well at all these tournaments, and we get what we have right now, which is a very under the radar kind of Scotty run from last year, because he's not clumped together with all of these wins. It's like win, kind of take a back seat, win, kind of take a back seat kind of thing, where Scotty was like win, win, take a back seat, win, win, like just all in a row. So it was all that was being talked about. But with Rahm now, it's like he's not quite doing it as often, but he's doing it just as often in a weird way.
Right. When you take a look at what Scotty did, he was playing week in and week out and winning multiple in a row there. With Jon Rahm, like, he does have two back-to-back wins, but there was a week gap where he didn't play the event in that middle week. So it didn't seem like it was so jam-packed together. But, you know, on the sheet here, they are back-to-back. It was just one was January 8th and one was January 22nd. You know, so it doesn't feel as, like, rapid-fire as Scotty's was, but it is about the same rate. It's five starts and three wins. That's insanity.
Which I believe Scotty was at 4-6 at one point last year.
Which is totally doable.
If Rahm wins his next start, then it's literally the same thing that Scotty did last year, just a little bit more spread out, and again, a little bit more under the radar.
Yeah,
except for the fact that he's world number one again.
He's not playing in the Honda Classic this next week here. I do know that. So that is something to note whenever he comes back onto the tour there, when he'll be out there. But I mean, it's becoming kind of this. Okay, so Jon Rahm is in the field. You know he's going to be top 10 anywhere in there and probably going to be competing for a win. Who's going to come after him, basically, right? And there are some guys of note. We'll talk about that. But my final question about Jon Rahm for you here, Rick. Do you think Jon Rahm gets another major this season? I think he's probably more poised to do it than he has been since his 2021 U.S. Open win.
I wouldn't be surprised. I'll put it that way.
Do you have a guess as to which major it might be?
I can't see him winning the Masters just because of accuracy. Where's the U.S. Open this year?
Fantastic question. I think, well, we had an episode about this, but I don't have time to go back and listen to it. So the U.S. Open Championship this year is at Los Angeles Golf Club or Country Club in California. And obviously this California stretch has been very friendly.
Yeah, I don't know much of anything about that course itself, but I probably, my gut's telling me either the PGA or the U.S. Open would be, which would be one of the ones that he would have a chance at. Because again, Masters, I don't think he has the accuracy for it. And honestly, I don't think I'll ever be able to guess who wins the British Open, because I feel like that week is just a shit show every week. And
every,
like,
single time.
And I just, like, I never know. Like, I guess one person and then they play horribly that week every single year. So honestly, I don't think I'm ever going to be able to guess that, which leaves me with the PGA and the U.S. Open. And I honestly think his game is good enough for either of those.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he does have that 2021 U.S. Open already under his belt. I do think he could be poised to win a PGA championship, but I kind of disagree with you on the Masters thing, because I'm looking at the numbers here. And since 2018, in Masters performances, he's gone 4th, T9, T7, T5, and T27 in the most recent. So more often than not, he's in the top 10 at the Masters. However, you might be onto something here, because since he's joined Callaway, it seems like his driving distance has gone up, but his accuracy has increased exponentially. So I don't know if that's a design situation that he's done on purpose, where he thinks that he can get himself out of sticky situations now with his approach game. But I can see what you're saying. I think a PGA championship could happen this year. I could see it. But I think it's almost inevitable that he wins a major this year with how he's playing. It looked like this in 2021. You know, he was playing so well. It was like, well, he's going to win one of them. And he wound up winning the second one of the season.
Yeah.
Or the third one of the season in the U.S. Open. I feel like he's got the tools necessary to win one of those right now. But there's another guy who, when, you know, week in, week out, you're like, okay, John Rahm's in the field. He's going to do well. Who's going to compete with him, right? You have your classic guys that you would talk about, Rory, Justin Thomas. You talk about Scottie Scheffler. There's one guy who is a fan favorite who has come to play this season, also came in second at the Genesis Invitational, almost taking it to a playoff with a chip in. Unfortunately, the ball just tripled over top of the hole.
To watch.
So painfully close. And one hell of a chip, by the way, kind of on an angle from the rough. Had to deal with some weird pin placement and almost sinks it. Was so close. But what a performance from him. And that's Max Homa. What a fantastic performance that he pulled off to kind of take it to John Rahm for a bit. I believe he had the lead going into Sunday, or I think John Rahm took it back at the end of Saturday. But they were 1 and 2 the whole time, and it was tight to watch. It was fun golf, and he was right there, but just couldn't wind up getting it done there. But man, yeah, I'm taking a look at the statistics now. And since September of last year, he has 2 wins and has never finished outside the top 25.
That's
except
not bad.
For once at the Waste Management. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 starts. He's got 2 victories and 7 top 25s. That is some damn good golf in the span of a couple of months there. And even if you look past that, he's played some really good golf. He's got a win back in May at the Wells Fargo Championship that we remember. He's only got 1 missed cut in his last 25 starts. He continuously makes cuts and makes it to Sunday, which is bound to get you wins and high finishes. It just is. Do you think Max Homa is the best chance to knock off a John Rahm moving forward at this point in the season? Obviously, Scotty has his win early in the season, and he's playing well. You got other guys like Sahith Theegala playing really well. He's in the top 10 right now. You're looking at guys like Seamus Power, who are playing really well, getting top 25 finishes in 4th in the FedEx Cup points. and obviously guys like Tony Finau, and then your heavier hitters like Patrick Cantlay, Will Zalatoris, you know, Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, etc. Mm-hmm. You have all those guys, but none of them are playing to the caliber that Max Homa is playing right now on a consistent basis. Do you think Max Homa, John Rahm might be a 1-2 punch to watch moving forward in all of these upcoming events moving into the Masters?
See, you kind of took away my little argument I was about to make. Was let me see what happens in the Masters and I'll go from there.
Okay.
Because I mean, it's no secret that the majors are so much more pressure, so much harder to win. And we've obviously seen Max Homa win. We've obviously seen him play really well, but we've never seen him win a major. Right. And when it comes down to it, you're remembered by how many majors you have and what majors you win and how many times you win them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the regular season events are fine because it gives you FedEx Cup points. You can win the Tour Championship at the end of the year, which is fine and dandy and a lot of money. Don't get me wrong. But at the same time, that doesn't have the pedigree that the Masters has. It doesn't have the pedigree that the U.S. Open has, that the PGA Championship or the British Open has. So at the moment, I'm not sure. Do I think he has a good chance to take him on in the Tour Championship? Yes, because I think he's going to have plenty of FedEx Cup points that as long as he continues playing how he is, he'll be in the top three or four of the FedEx Cup standings come the end of the season. But in general, I'm not so sure, and I kind of want to see how the Masters goes before I make a final decision.
Right, and I think that's kind of where everybody's eyes are pointing towards. You see these guys at this point in the season getting hot and playing really good golf, and you're like, okay, we have the Masters coming up. Can any of these guys be your eventual Masters winner? However, we do know, I believe in 2021 is when Hideki Matsuyama won the Masters. Yeah. He really wasn't playing too well moving into that Masters, and then boom, here comes Masters Sunday, and he's wearing a green jacket, you know? So
yeah,
obviously anything can happen, and that is the beauty of PGA golf, but we do have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 events, including the upcoming Honda before the Masters. So we do have some time for any of these guys to either get cold, keep staying hot, or to see other guys come out of the mix here. But when you look at the current FedEx Cup standings, there's one name who has been moving up this board with aggression, and that is Scottie Scheffler. And I really think it would be amiss to count him out of this, right?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about him almost ad nauseum, it seems like, at this point, considering he just came onto the stage last year with his first ever win at the Waste Management, and then some just like comes from the clouds.
Yeah.
And wins the Masters truly out of nowhere, which is why I'm not counting Max Homa out when it comes to the Masters, because we saw it happen with Scottie Scheffler last year. If you get hot and you get confident, these guys are all good enough that they can all win a major. Otherwise, they wouldn't be on the PGA Tour. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm not counting him out yet. But yeah, I realistically, at this exact moment, I would say Scottie Scheffler has the best chance to dethrone Jon Rahm. And he was literally world number one just last week until Rahm won this week.
Yep.
So I don't think that's a crazy thing to say that he has the best chances to. Does Max Homa have a chance? Yes. Not as good, though.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to agree with you. It's really hard to just look at what Jon Rahm's doing right now and assume anything other than he's probably going to win every time he tees it up. It's arguably just as insane as the Scotty performance last year. It's just Scotty's felt more like rapid fire. It was like every weekend you look at your phone, it's like, Scottie Scheffler wins. And you're like, okay, we're just going to keep doing this, huh? I think also what helps his is that a major was in the middle of that. So like that just puts the cherry on that perfect pie that he had there.
Yeah, well, the other thing too was that it went from his first win to a Masters win all within a span of 6 weeks, which
is insane.
Is gonna make storylines. That's all it comes down to is whether, and that's the thing that Jon Rahm doesn't have is he already has majors, he already has a bunch of wins. So doing stuff like this isn't gonna make as many headlines as this random kid who won his first tournament at the Waste Management People's Open and ended up winning the Masters 6 weeks later.
Right. And, you know, don't get me wrong. Like, obviously, I know that talking about this right now is like almost like talking about Jordan Spieth's attempt at it when he was young. But remember, John Rahm right now is 28 years old. If he wins another one of the majors, he'll be going into 29 years old with 2 out of 4 majors in his career so far. Could John Rahm be a candidate for winning a Grand Slam? Could he be one of the guys that is poised to do it? Now, like I said, when Jordan Spieth was very young and he won the Masters and the U.S. Open in 2015 and then won the Open in 2017, everybody was like, okay, yeah, he's a shoo-in for you know, a Grand Slam. He's going to do it probably next season, right? And here we are in 2023, and he has not won another major. Not just not won another major, but hasn't won any of the ones that he has won beforehand. The closest he came was winning another just Open in 2021 when he came in second. So far, though, the elusive PGA Championship has eluded him. But what do you think about John Rahm's chances? If he wins another major this year, do you think that he's somebody that you could argue could win a career Grand Slam?
Yes, but he has to win one this year.
He has to,
he's
right?
He's playing too good right now to not win one. And we've seen how easy it is to just fall off the face of the earth when it comes to the PGA Tour, that I feel like you have to get one now and then leave yourself with two more within the next 5-6 years at most, I would say. Because once you start hitting your late 30s, early 40s, it's going to be so hard to keep up with the young guys that are coming up.
Yeah, especially not only are the young guys hitting the ball so much farther, but they're hitting it with so much more accuracy as the ages get younger and, you know, the golfers get better at a much younger age. You're going to be 33 and these kids are going to be out driving you by 30 yards and getting it closer on the approach by 2 feet. And you're sitting there going, I don't know how to compete with this. And then you find yourself on the Champions Tour wondering what the hell happened. But I agree with you. I think he has to win one this year. And then you could really debate talking about a Grand Slam in the next 5-6 years, because man, is he playing really good golf and doesn't look like he has an off button. So interested to see. Obviously I'm not even going to bother comparing it to Tiger, because why even give that? He did the Tiger Slam for a reason. That happened, folks. So we don't need to talk about that, but speaking of Tiger, he's back and he played at the Genesis. That did happen. So you look at the numbers here. What was that?
And somehow made the cut.
Somehow makes the cut. So you look at the numbers here. He shot 69. Nice. 74, 67, 73 for a T45, 1 under. Playing some decent golf. And of course, on Thursday and Friday, his grouping was Rory McIlroy and Justin Thomas. Justin Thomas, someone that he's very close to, a very good friend, almost like an uncle to Charlie, his son. And there was a little bit of a, you know, friendly banter between the two of them that happened to get caught on camera. So Tiger outdrove Justin on one of the holes, and while they were walking to their balls, it appeared that he handed something to Justin Thomas, and it was caught on camera. And then if you enhance the phone and you zoom in a little bit, it is a tampon. For those of you that don't know what a tampon is, go ahead and Google that. You are welcome. But he hands Justin Thomas a tampon. You get what the joke is. It's funny, people. It's a funny joke. Unfortunately, he was forced to apologize for a prank amongst friends. I don't think it was necessary that he need apologize. I think he was basically told by PGA Tour, not HR. What's the word I'm looking for here? Who's the department?
The people that I forget what they're called.
Dude, I forget what they're called too. What is this?
Damage control. Let's call it damage.
Yeah, control. Sure. The damage control team at PGA Tour had to tell him like, hey, apologize for this, because we don't want the storm that'll come with it. So he does apologize. However, that's a funny joke, right?
It's funny. I mean, like, anybody who plays weekend golf with their buddies has thought of doing something along those lines, or even made a comment along those lines. I don't know. I guess I understand that it could be offensive to some people, but at the same time, you have to remember how close of friends these guys are. it's literally just like you're going out and playing with your friends on the weekend. It's not 100%. Like, it's not like a malicious thing. It's not something that was intended to be offending. He obviously didn't just like hand it to him outright. He obviously tried to keep it a little bit sly, which means like obviously he wasn't trying to offend anybody. It was more
right. He's not trying to embarrass Justin or make a scene
about
it.
He's just trying to get a joke across. Yeah. And cameras are too good these days. That's all it comes out to.
I mean, many, many moons ago when Justin, not Justin, when Tiger Woods was new on tour and stuff like that, if he did that, first of all, no one's watching the golf on Thursday and Friday enough to see it, let alone the cameras aren't good enough to capture what he handed over. So, you know, the fact that technology has advanced did not help that. But I just love the idea of Tiger Woods in the morning of that round going into his bathroom and going into his wife's tampon box and going, when I outdrive Justin, and I mean when I outdrive him, because I will, I'm going to give him this. And he goes to his caddy and he's like, put this in the bag. You'll know when they hand it to me. it's too funny of a joke. I don't understand the apology, but, you know, I guess he had to do it because, you know, the PGA Tour probably told him he had to. So I don't know. It just, to me, that's very funny. But to talk a little bit more about the golf that Tiger was actually shooting, a 69, 74, 67, 73, one under for a T45 at an event that was one of the highlighted events this year. You know, remember that. So the field was pretty good. He came in T45. Top 50 is kind of a good sign for Tiger right now in his career. Yeah. Remember, he's playing with one leg, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And he battled back from being, you know, almost missing the cut entirely, battled back to being one under by the time the tournament was over. So I want to ask you, Rick, do you think that this is competitive enough golf for Tiger to be deemed as a competitive golfer right now?
I mean, he's still playing on the PGA Tour, so everybody there is a competitive golfer. I mean, we have guys like Kevin Kisner, Joel Damon, like the guys that are always middle of the pack, don't really ever break the top 20, top 15, except for a handful of times a year. And we still consider them competitive golfers because they are. Like, at any given week, they could just show up. And I have to reference, unfortunately, I have to reference the psychopath that is Phil Mickelson winning the PGA Championship a few years back at 50. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Anything's possible. He's still the greatest golfer of all time, even though he's not playing like he did when he was considered the greatest golfer of all time as a 20-something-year-old. But he still has that in him. It's just about putting it together all in one weekend.
Yeah, it's all about really like the right pieces falling in the right places, mm-hmm. and having the, you know, good enough physical energy to get himself through 4 days of golf, walking, and be able to also put himself in a winning mindset. I think one of the biggest takeaways for me after reading about, you know, some of the on-site reporters, you know, takeaways from Tiger's rounds is the fact that this course was surprisingly a tough walk. Like, even your younger guys and your more in shape guys on tour were saying that it was a tough walk course, which means he walked all four rounds and shot one under on a course that is difficult to walk.
Yeah.
Now, did we ever think at any point in our time on this podcast we'd be talking about the walkability of a golf course on the tour? No. But when it comes to where Tiger is at this point in his life, considering what has happened to his body and the fact that he has pretty much one leg that he's working with, the fact that he was able to walk all four rounds and still shoot one under and get himself in the top 50 of that tournament does say something, because there are some, you know, major courses and some courses that they're going to play this season that are pretty easy walks.
Yeah.
You know, so I think if we're saying, can he contend at majors? Probably not. Can he contend at regular events this year if he decides to play them? I don't see why not. You know, like,
yeah, I mean, it all comes down to how he's feeling physically, because we know he's still mentally there. He's still mentally able to do it. He's still physically able to do it. Like we said, just as long as he puts it all together at the same time. And do I think he's going to win again this year? Probably not, just because of all the talent that there is on tour. I mean, if you, like, if you were to take it to a playoff, which I don't see Tiger outright winning by like a handful of strokes any tournaments. I think if he did, it would be a grind for him to get that W. And right. if you put him into a playoff with any of these young guys, I don't see it ending well for him, because that means he already had played 72 holes and now he's got to go walk it again.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you there. It's just, I really think that there's a chance that he could get it done this year. A win, that is. I do think it would take a weaker field, and I think it would take a easily walkable course. Yeah. But I think he could get it done, like on a shorter Sounds course to me this like season with a weaker to hit field.
Up the John Deere Classic.
Yeah, hey, you hit up that John Deere Classic, my man. You might get yourself a W in the beautiful rolling cornfields of Iowa. All right,
and a lot of money.
And a lot of money, which is always helpful. Although I don't think he's strapped for money, to be totally honest with you. He is Tiger.
Yeah, but he doesn't have as much as he would if he went to live.
That's true. That's true. We are.
They tell you at the beginning of the episode what the reported number was that he was offered.
Which episode? Episode 3?
Yeah.
Damn it! I gotta watch that.
Yeah, they tell you right away what they're like talking about, like all the offers and everything, and they're like Tiger was offered or reported, and then they say how much it was. I'm not gonna spoil it for anybody, but it was a large number.
Dude, you were. So close to having that, what's the word I'm looking for? To having that transition down perfectly. I just had one more thing I want to talk about, and then we're going to go right into that. You were right there.
Darn it.
Hey, you're on it, though. You're on it. Keep your head up, guy. Keep your head up. Did want to touch on one more point before we talk about the obvious coolest thing in golf right now, which is the Full Swing docuseries on Netflix.
For sure.
So far this season, we've had 3 of the PGA Tour designated events. Now, for those of you that don't remember exactly what those are the, I believe, 20 different events that the PGA Tour has decided to highlight this season, with bigger payouts to hopefully attract all of the stars to play multiple events as the season goes on. So far, we've had 3. We've had the Century Tournament of Champions, the Waste Management Phoenix Open, and the Genesis Invitational. I would say every single one of those has provided incredible golf to watch. Obviously, the Tournament of Champions was great, with John Rahm winning that, pretty much solidifying himself as the champion of champions. Scottie Scheffler getting it done at the Phoenix Open. Course, it's the Waste Management, duh. And then the Genesis Invitational that we just watched, with Max Homa almost holding out, taking it to a playoff right there, but John Rahm able to fend him off. Rick, I got to ask you, are you impressed with the designated events so far? Do you think that these bigger purses are offering more of an incentive for these bigger golfers to show up and try to win these events to win, obviously, bigger purses?
I mean, honestly, it's hard to say, because we'd have to go back and look at all these tournaments in the past and if these golfers were there before, what they shot before, stuff like that. I think the money's always going to be a draw. Money talks, and I don't know if you can necessarily prepare specifically for these tournaments as far as your physical state goes, but you can definitely get your mental state in a better spot than you were the year before if you know that there's that much extra money on the line.
Right.
And I think that's where you get the edge anyway. Obviously, these guys are all amazing golfers, and the mental edge is what's going to get you there. So maybe it's taking 10 extra minutes to meditate at the end of your workout or whatever every day before the tournament, whatever you got to do to get your head in the game, basically. But yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, money talks. These events are good events to play in general. Like, I think these guys would be there whether the money was there or not, but it definitely does add a little bit of incentive to be excited about being there and not feel like you have to be there.
Yeah. Because like, if you just make the cut, you're making way more money than you would by just making the cut in other events. So like Emiliano Grillo came in last on Sunday at 67 with 8 over, still made way more money than he would have in years past of this event for coming in last on Sunday. Yep. So I do think it's a really, really solid incentive for these guys to play in these events. The only thing is, I'm looking at the schedule and I look at a bunch of tournaments that guys like to play anyways.
Yeah.
I think if they were really going to do this to the best of their capability, they would start doing it like one of these should be the John Deere, you know?
Yeah.
Because what would be funnier than all of the world's best golfers showing up in the middle of a cornfield in Iowa?
Come on. The middle of nowhere in Iowa. Like, that would be amazing.
That'd be so great. Right.
That's where they're missing is – oh, no. My microphone disconnect?
Yeah. I mean, we can still hear you, but the quality got worse there.
Let me see if I can bring it back. Come on.
I believe in you.
It's the laptop, I'm telling you.
Dude, that laptop has it out for you at this point.
It does. It's like, do you think I...
All right, try to talk. How are we? Oh, much better.
Oh, no.
Oh, you're good. What?
I'm good?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It keeps popping up on the screen telling me that it's switching microphones again.
No, right now you're solid.
What were we talking about?
We were talking about the John Deere being one of the designated events.
Oh, yeah. Totally should be. You want to give people incentive to show up and play better than they would normally? That's the best place to do it because everybody hates the John Deere.
Yep.
And if you could win a bunch of money, people would show up.
Make them show up to Iowa just because.
If
just
you
cause.
Build it, they will come.
That's a fact.
The direct quote.
That is very much a kind of what they're doing here with these designated events. The one I'm the most excited about, and I'm looking at this entire schedule here, the WGC Dell Technologies match play being a designated event, making the money much bigger for this one is going to be so sick. Awesome. Because you're just making Kevin Kisner more rich now. That's basically what you're doing.
It's a great event in the first place. And the fun part about it is that's one of the big draws for watching because people relate to match play because that's what we play on weekends.
100%.
And you add in the incentive for these guys to not just be messing around and like we're not going to see, I don't think, as many putts just given up.
Oh, 100%.
Like we have in years past with how much money is on the line now.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously still going to be a little bit more fun of an event than normal, but with extra money on the line, it's going to make for a lot better golf. And I'm excited to watch it. I mean, I usually watch it anyway because it's one of my favorite events to watch, but.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, on Sunday, if they're like the guys that are close, you're going to be seeing Ryder Cup tactics. They're going to be like, yeah, you're putting that out, big guy. I know it's from 2 feet, but I got to see that go in the hole. All right.
Yeah, I gotta make my money.
Yeah, that's for sure. That'll definitely be one of the more fun designated event that they have planned moving forward here. But now let's talk about that Full Swing docuseries on Netflix. Rick, did you finish episode 3?
I finished episode 3. I started episode 4.
I just finished episode 2. So far I am through the Brooks Koepka episode. And I got to tell you so far, Rick, I am wholly 100% impressed. However, I thought there would be some more drama at this point.
Oh, you just wait till episode 3.
That's what I'm saying is I'm excited for episode 3 because I feel like everybody was like, whoa, the drama in this series is huge. And I was like, I have yet to see it. I saw a very nice little sweet romance documentary about Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth in episode 1. Which was awesome because I loved both of them. And then, you know, the Brooks Koepka episode was...
Mm-hmm.
Very revealing. I think if you're the Live Tour, you're probably a little pissed at Brooks for he didn't show himself to be that like kind of alpha male douchebag that we all thought he was.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting side of Brooks I didn't think I was going to see because remember his whole thing was, oh, I don't practice. I just show up and win at, you know, majors because that's what I do. I'm Brooks Koepka. And then in that, it's like he's in his living room working on his putting with his coach, just like on a weekday evening. He's like trying to figure out what's going wrong with, you know, with his swing and everything. He's trying to heal himself back up from injury, which I found really funny when he was talking about his leg injuries and the video was of him benching.
Yeah. I don't want to spoil too much, but I think the thing that really hit home for a lot of people about how seriously Brooks was taking his situation and how upset he actually was about it was when he was saying about how Jenna will just be talking to him and he'll be thinking about his swing. I think a lot of guys were like that. Okay. That's weird because
that's how you thought.
Not,
yeah.
Why are you not focusing on Jenna at that point?
Dumbass. What the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah. So that was the reaction there. I feel like, but yeah, don't worry. The drama is coming. All I'm going to say if you haven't seen yet, episode 3 is centered around Ian Poulter. So
yeah, that I'm excited about, because that dude's an English psychopath. I'm excited to watch that episode.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, for those of you that have seen it so far, feel free to reach out to us on socials at @FromTheTips_pod on Instagram and at @FTT_pod on Twitter. We want to hear your reactions. We want to see what you guys thought. Like, maybe you guys thought that Brooks Koepka is still a douchebag after that episode, and we ask you why. My one coworker did say something I don't necessarily agree with, but I found incredibly funny. He was like, you know, I watched that episode. He's a big golf guy too, by the way. He's the one that organized the entire fantasy golf thing that I'm in.
Okay.
He was like, look, I don't know what it is, but like, I get that people are like, oh, maybe he's not this alpha dog douchebag that we all thought he was. And he said, but I'm watching that episode and I'm like, is Brooks Koepka actually a dumb person? And I was like, where did you get that from that episode? Like, to me, it was like he was really focused on trying to fix his golf game. The part where he put the number 33 on his golf balls, because that's Jenna's favorite number, adorable. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like, yeah, Brooks being Brooks and then, you know, leaving for the LIV Tour or whatever. But that wasn't covered in the episode. Leaving for the LIV Tour or whatever. But like, I don't know if I agree with all that, but this is kind of the different takes that I'm talking about, people. So your takes on any of the episodes, feel free to reach out to us on the socials. We can talk about it. We'll talk about it on the podcast. We are nothing but willing to talk to our fans, because it looks like, according to our numbers on anchor.fm, that our fan base is actually increasing slightly. So whoever you new people are, hit us up. We have socials. Welcome. We didn't talk about mayonnaise this episode, even though I recently sent Rick a Snapchat of me using Duke's mayonnaise, because that is our unofficial official sponsor. What?
I was just squirting it into a dish.
I was wondering if you would ask about that. Yeah, so I was squirting a squeezable bottle of Duke's mayonnaise into a small dish, because I was making a spread for to top fish. So it's that, some salt, and some dill weed, and you kind of mix that together and you top it on fish and bake it, and it tastes pretty good. But yeah, it's all mayonnaise based. So it was delicious tonight. I'm not gonna lie, I had it for dinner. It was fantastic.
Nice.
But yeah, I'm excited to watch the rest of the episodes. I should probably be close to finishing come this time next week when we finish next episode. But I might not be. It depends. I might get caught up in whatever else I'm doing. But to move forward here past that and how incredible it truly is, let's finish up this episode. We got two things left. Let's talk about some fantasy golf people, because Brian came from the heavens and was ready for these hands. Remember, I picked Sungjae Im and John Rahm. Now, Sungjae disappointed me exponentially. I don't know what the hell happened to you, dude, but I'm a little salty with you right now. But John Rahm, a just mortal lock. The man will always be a lock for a W.
Great pick.
I'm a little pissed off that I can't pick him again until after the PGA Championship, but
you got him on a win week, so there's not really much else you could ask for.
I know, it's true. I got him on a win week. I catapulted myself from 7th to 3rd in the standings at 1.1 tokens, and my current winnings are 4.17 million. Go me. Wish I had that money in my bank account. Unfortunately, that is not how that works.
Facts.
I was told that that's how that works. I am incredibly disappointed.
I've been lied to.
I do got to tell you, and I think that Carter is actually one of our newer listeners, so shout out to Carter here.
Shout out, Carter.
But look at this dude's spreadsheet that he has. That's is the immaculate spreadsheet. And he sends this out every week.
That's and immaculate.
You get a nice little email with the standings. Look at this. He puts in some good work. Now, do I watch him do it pretty much every week at work? Sure. I'm not gonna say a word though, because this is immaculately done. This is really cool. For those of you that, you know, want to maybe get into fantasy golf with your buddies who watch a lot of golf, I'd say do it. We've had nothing but fun so far with it. And according to Carter, it's not all that hard to keep up with. He just does these spreadsheets because he likes to make it look professional. So you don't even have to go through all of this. You can just make it very, very casual, as it were. But let's get into this week's upcoming power rankings, because your boy made his picks already, and I want to see if Rob Bolton agrees with me or if he doesn't. My assumption is...
When do you make your picks for these?
I made it today.
Before... I guess the field is announced already.
Yeah, no, the field's announced. Yeah. The power rankings, not so much yet, but the field is announced. Let's see if I can find the power rankings. Has Rob posted these yet? Robbie? Robbo?
Where art thou?
What are we doing here, kid?
It's late, too. They should be
I know! Rob, a little late night posting for you here? What's happening? Let's see.
Nothing doing?
Oh, here we go. 1 hour ago. Okay, Rob came through. Rob came through. He's here. Oh, I love to see it. I love to see that one of my picks is in the top five. I'm loving this. The other one doesn't look like he made the top 15 here, but I believe in him, damn it. I believe in him. it is a bit of a weaker field. This is the Honda Classic. Last year's winner was Sepp Straka. I almost picked him again, but I don't necessarily believe that picking back-to-back winners is always a good move. It doesn't happen too often.
I don't know about that one either.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to be honest. I did pick my one guy who happens to be in the top 10 on vibes and vibes alone, and I think Rick is going to guess the one I picked here, but I don't know if you're going to guess the other one, because the other one was also picked off vibes for a totally different reason. So let's get into it. Power rankings top five. Rick, in no specific order, have fun with this one, buddy. Denny McCarthy.
What?
Chris Kirk, Sung J.M., Shane Lowry, and Matt Kuchar.
What?
I have no idea. What the fuck?
That's horrible.
Dude.
I don't even remember their names. Okay, we're going to go Kuchar 5, McCarthy 4, M 3, whoever wasn't Shane Lowry 2, and Shane Lowry 1.
He didn't get a single one right, I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, checks out. Shane Lowry was your pick, though, I'm assuming, correct?
100%. 100%.
Okay.
my favorite bit is that the only guy who is in the top 10 in the FedEx Cup points in this dude's top 15, he put it number 8.
Who's that?
Adam Svensson. He's number 10 in the FedEx Cup.
There's put him in 8. This event,
he's the only top 10 guy playing this week.
That's insane.
I mean, what are we doing? But no, unfortunately, Rick, you did not get any of them right. 5-1, 5 being Chris Kirk, 4 being Matt Kuchar, 3 being Denny McCarthy, 2 being Shane Lowry, and 1 being Sung J.M. I will be pissed off if Sung J.M. wins this week. I would not be happy.
I thought about Sung J.M. Mm-hmm. at 1, but then I was like, no, I don't know about that.
He just played so poorly last week. I don't...
Yeah.
He just was not on it.
Let's hear it. What's Rob's reasoning?
Let's figure it out. Rob, what do you got for us here? Number 5, Chris Kirk, one of the best ball strikers of his generation. Okay. I feel like we're... getting ahead.
What generation?
Yeah, I don't. Well, how many years has this guy been a pro? Like, I don't know his name off the top of my head here.
I mean, I know of Chris Kirk, but like,
all right, he's been
what generation are we referring to?
He's been a pro since 2017. He is top 50 in the world. Does not have a professional win.
He's 37 years old.
37 years old, does not have a professional win. I feel like
he is most likely a serial killer.
I'm seeing a lot of the word cut. See,
there's no way.
Oh, what happened? This in 2019, he only made 3 cuts in the season.
Tell me this dude's not a serial killer.
Oh, sorry. He does have 1 professional win in 2020, at the King and Bear Classic on the Corn Ferry Tour. My bad. No, that's a psycho.
Look,
that's a
eyes.
Psycho killer. Qu'est-ce que c'est? Wow. Yeah, that's brutal. He did have a hot stretch here in 2021 there. Towards the beginning of 2021, had a bit of a hot stretch. Has not since then, though. Been pretty ice cold. So apparently he's the best ball striker of his generation. has been a regular at PGA National since he splashed on the PGA Tour in 2011. The loyalty paid off for a personal best T7 last year. He finished T25 the year prior to pair of thirds to open 2023. Pair of thirds where? I did not see that. Where is this? You're lying to me. 2020. Yeah, and then he just got cut. Are we ignoring this, Rob? It goes 3T3 cut. There's a clear word in between there. Rob's ignorance for the facts just befuddles me to this day. All right, Chris Kirk, number five. Adam Svensson clearly could have taken that spot, considering that he's in the top 10 of the FedEx Cup points right now. I'm just saying. Number four, the old man himself, Matt Kuchar. He is 4-for-4 at PGA National, but this is his first appearance in a dozen years. So we're putting him at four? Rob, do we have a stroke? We were having a really good run of some reasonable power rankings, and then you come at me with this shit?
He hasn't played this course in 12 years, but, you know.
What are we talking about right now? What's happening? Damn it, Rob. With his boring ball flight, propensity to hit fairways and roll in putts, he may be questioning his decision for the hiatus. Why did you describe his ball flight as boring?
It doesn't really give me hope for the top four.
Yeah, it doesn't give me top five power rankings vibes here, Rob. already on the board with a pair of top tens in 2023. Matt Kuchar has a pair of top tens this year. Hold the fucking phone. Hold on. I have to look this up because I don't necessarily always believe what Rob is saying to me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he does. At the Sony Open, cut T32, 8 at the Genesis. Let's not also forget the other cut this season and the two other 30s this season. We'll just ignore the rest of that. We'll go with the top 10s that he has. Congrats, buddy. Really, definitely. Really, really pulling for you there.
It makes sense.
I have no problem with Matt Kuchar. He's part of the old boys club. He's pushing 45 right now. Mm-hmm. But top five in the power rankings. I know this is a weak event. I get it. We have to have some sort of. You're putting him ahead of Sepp Straka, Adam Svensson, Harris English, Alex Noren, who is one of the most underrated guys on tour right now. You're out of your fucking mind.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
But hey, number three. Why not? Denny McCarthy, the nearby resident of Jupiter, so's every PGA Tour golfer.
Yeah, that's where they all live.
That's where they all live. Is fresh off a T14 at Riviera, where you'd expect his short game to thrive, but it's just the latest in an ongoing string of glossy results. Yet, his career best finish remains at PGA National in 2021, where he placed T3. Okay, that's reasonable. It's his best finish. He had a T3 here at this course. Those are reasonable expectations. He also did just come off a T14 of the Genesis and the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. He was a T4. However, he was cut at the Waste Management. So not awesome in his last three, but not bad. Third in the power rankings, not so much. Five, sure. I go five, six, maybe even seven. That's fine.
Yeah.
I just feel like there's and this is so weird because Rob Bolton's propensity to always put the last year's winner in the top five does not track with him putting Sepp Straka at seven. It makes no sense. Number two, though, the good old boy from Ireland, one of my favorite golfers just because he's so happy-go-lucky and jolly, Shane Lowry. You'll understand if he passes on a rain dance at any time in his career. Just because he won a major in the rain does not mean he wants to play in the rain every time, Rob. The Irishman has unfinished business at PGA National, where the heavens opened up as he approached the finish line last year. He's 5-for-5 with the impressive runner-up in 2022. Yeah, looks like Shane Lowry is poised for quite some time here.
I'll take it.
Look, I like Shane Lowry in this spot. I wish he was number one. Again, I will be pissed off if number one does end up winning, but Sungjae Im, a guy I do like, just kind of pissed about his performance last week for fantasy purposes. He's been on an extended heater in earnest since late July. Not so much last week, Rob. I don't know if you watched. Not so much last week. So he's the predominant target at PGA National, where he's already had considerable success, broke through in 2020 and answered with a T8 in 2021. No weaknesses and impeccably balanced. We do know that about Sungjae Im. He's probably one of the best all-around golfers on the PGA Tour. I think as far as well-balanced golfers are concerned, he might be the best overall. But we obviously know it's because he never stops golfing. He golfs in his free time. He golfs on when he's on the job. He golfs in his sleep. I don't know. I don't think he ever truly stops unless he has to because he's ill. I really don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can agree with the first two here. 3, 4, and 5, I don't know what Rob was smoking.
Yeah, I don't agree with those at all.
Yeah, I mean, he usually gets these posted by 6 p.m. This time it was 7 p.m. I'm wondering if he was a little bit on the wine or something like that. Maybe fighting he had a couple of drinks here. Yeah, you know, fighting some demons back, possibly, Rob. If you have a drinking problem, buddy, you can feel free to reach out to us. We will not help you, but we will make fun of you.
We'll call you stupid.
As always, Rick, unless you have any other golf news, buddy, that's going to do it for this episode.
No, I think that's it. Go watch Full Swing. It's a good documentary.
Yeah, go watch it. I'm going to try to finish it. It's one hell of a docuseries.
I guess if you have nothing better to do, you can watch the tournament this weekend. Probably won't be watching too much of it myself. If I have free time, I'm going to be honest. If I have free time this weekend, I'm going to watch Full Swing. I'm not going to watch the tournament.
100%. We have talked about this before, though. We do believe the Honda Classic logo is one of the best logos.
Yeah.
There is just not one of the best tournaments to watch, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Now this could have been one of those tournaments that I could see them making a designated event because it's usually a smaller event and try to get other.
And they might do that in the future because they said they're planning on doing that with more events.
And look, we know the PGA Tour listens to this podcast. It's been documented many, many times. So listen up, PGA Tour. We're giving you specklets of wisdom. You're welcome. As always, though, folks, please, please, please go ahead and follow us on our socials on Instagram at @FromTheTips_pod and on Twitter at @FTT_pod. Once you hit follow, go ahead and DM us literally anything you want. If you just want to say hi, we'll respond. If you want to chirp us for being idiots, go ahead. We totally understand. If you want to completely congratulate us for being the best golf podcast there is in the nation, yeah, we get it. We'll take the congratulatories. Thank you so much. But please go follow us on there. We are more active during the summers when we're able to get out on the golf course. This summer is going to be super cool. We have some stuff planned with our friends over at Hack Cross America. We have the Hack Cross America tour that Rick and I will be on the same team, I might add. So we're looking to rip it up down there in Florida. This is going to be a pretty cool summer for the From the Tips podcast. So stay tuned for any changing updates with that. As always, thank you so much for listening. If you have made it this far into the podcast, we wholly appreciate it. You guys rock for continuing to listening and clearly sharing with your friends as our listens have gone up recently. Very much appreciate it. We have finally eclipsed the 2,000 listens mark. Thank you so much for doing that for us. It's the only reason that we keep coming back. You know, we're 100 episodes into this and, you know, 2,000 listens. That means that we're technically at a, 20 listen clip per episode. That's awesome, guys. Just the fact, like, even we don't even have 20 friends between the two of us. So the fact that there's obviously people we don't know who like to listen to our podcast is something that we truly will never understand, but we will forever be grateful for. As always, thank you so much for listening again, and we out.
Thanks, guys. See you later.